Well, this is the other side of midnight. Believe it or not, there are several entities in that song that are mentioned in the book of my next guest. The book is called Last Days of New York, A Reporter's True Tale. It is written by a gentleman who has a great deal of experience as a journalist, having written for City Journal, The New York Post, The New York Daily News, and The Wall Street Journal. These days, he's managing editor of The American Mind. It gives me a great deal of pleasure to say good morning to Seth Baron. Seth, good morning, and thank you for coming on the radio with me so early.
Oh, good morning, Frank. Thanks. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
Now, your book, The Last Days of New York, it has a picture of the Empire State Building on its cover, and then what looks like a blood droplet splattering across the cover. Are you guilty of being a little too hyperbolic and maybe even exaggerating some of the problems that New York is facing for the sake of getting booked on radio shows and selling books?
Well, Frank, you know, I mean, that's a pretty serious charge you're leveling at me. But, you know, I would say that New York is facing kind of a grim moment. And I think everybody would agree with that. I mean, never in New York City's history have murders and crime and shootings increased so rapidly year to year. You know, de Blasio likes to say, oh, well, crime is still, murders are still low compared to what they used to be. But here's the thing. People don't experience reality in terms of, like, you know, long historical trends. What they experience is the velocity of the day to day. And, you know, from that perspective, I would say New Yorkers are being buffeted by very intense G forces.
So you chronicle in the book New York's recovery from the recession of 2008 to where we are today, which is essentially New York being struggling to survive through a pandemic, through rising crime, through civil unrest, and through a dramatic collapse in revenue due to the shutdown and the decline in economic activity. Do you think there's really a chance that New York, who has seen more than its fair share of challenges in the past, may not recover from the current crises that we're facing?
Well, you know, that's another very good question. And here's the thing. When Giuliani took over at the beginning of 1994, he had tools in his toolkit that will not be available to the next mayor of New York City. The last 8 years, we've seen the city council and the state legislature enact laws that, in a sense, will codify the current chaos. Bail reform, discovery reform, the decriminalization of quality of life crimes like public urination, decriminalization of marijuana, the diaphragm law. There's a whole series of new laws that are going to make it very hard to restore order. Even if, say, Curtis Sliwa became mayor of New York City, you know, he would be handcuffed, basically, by all of these new laws.
Now, how would you compare what we've seen in New York with what we've seen in other cities that have wrestled with things like homelessness, like San Francisco, or issues like violent crime, like Chicago? Is New York doing better, worse, or about the same as in terms of the speed of our decay as compared to cities like San Francisco, Chicago, Seattle, etc.?
That's a great question. We don't have the same kind of homeless situation that you see on the West Coast. And of course, neither does Chicago. And there's a good reason for that. It's weather. We don't have the kind of climate that is conducive to year-round campsites. At the same time, you know, I don't think we can say, oh, well, every city's experiencing the same problem. Newark, New Jersey, is right across the river from us, and that's always been, like, you know, considered a basket case compared to New York City. Well, in 2020, they had a 0% increase in murders. Now, I don't know what they're doing, but well, New York City had a 40% increase. So I don't know what they're doing over in Newark, but they also had COVID. They also have poverty. So something's going on in New York City and some other cities that's clearly not the right course of action.
Well, so, and if people are just tuning in, we're talking with Seth Baron. He's the author of a new book. It's called The Last Days of New York, A Reporter's True Tale. The foreword is by Heather McDonald from the Manhattan Institute. So, Seth, what can the next mayor do? You mentioned that if Curtis were to be elected, he'd be handcuffed because of state bail reform laws, state discovery reform laws. Let's say you do have a former cop like an Eric Adams or a guy that's made crime fighting his mission like Curtis Sliwa. What can they actually do to turn things around if they are elected?
Look, I mean, I'm not saying that New York is 100% down and out. Okay, I mean, where there's hope, there's life. But I'm sorry, where there's life, there's hope. But, you know, they're going to have to get the streets safe and orderly. I mean, for instance, I live near Washington Square Park. It's been a total nightmare for over the last year, and it's getting worse and worse and worse. And de Blasio and the police don't seem willing to exercise the will to shut down the part of the all-night partying that goes on. Now you've got people on illegal dirt bikes just tearing around the park. Those can be seized on the spot. You don't need a warrant. You can just take them. But we don't see anything going on. So, you know, it's a matter of will. And whoever the next mayor is going to have to exercise enormous will, and the people of New York are going to have to tell the city council and the state legislature that it's time to, you know, scale back some of these crazy reforms that they so-called reforms that they enacted in the last few years.
And talk to me about some of the leading candidates for mayor. The Democratic contest, which, you know, if you're the Democrat nominee, chances are you've got a pretty hefty advantage in the general election. It seems to be led primarily at this point by Eric Adams, Andrew Yang, and Catherine Garcia, although there does seem to be an outside chance that Maya Wiley could hobble together a progressive coalition that propels her to victory. Out of those four candidates, anybody that you find particularly scary, or is there anybody among those four that you think might not do a bad job as mayor?
Well, Maya Wiley would be a total disaster. She would be like de Blasio on steroids. I mean, at least de Blasio went through the system and got elected to school board and city council and public advocate, and he paid his dues and he worked his way up to being mayor. Maya Wiley is just, you know, a creature of George Soros, who's nurtured her career from the beginning and who has, you know, an extremely radical anti-police, pro, equity outlook. So she would be terrible. Andrew Yang, I find, in a way, appealing just because he's an outsider and he's not yet owned by any of the special interests. You know, he's bucked the teachers union, for instance, which is an appealing thing to do. Eric Adams, I find a little erratic. I'm not exactly sure what he would bring to the table. And Catherine Garcia, she seems competent. I don't know, but I guess I kind of wonder about anyone who worked for de Blasio for 7 years.
Well, so let's talk about de Blasio. And we're talking with Seth Baron. If you have questions, we'll try and get to your questions for Seth Baron while he's on the line. 800-848-9222. It's 1-800-848-WABC. We have term limits, so Mayor de Blasio is not going to be around come January anyway. Oh, now that we've had about 8 years of his mayoralty, what do you think his legacy actually will be as mayor? Good, bad, and ugly? Give us the lowdown. How do you think Bill de Blasio will be remembered?
I think Bill de Blasio will be remembered as the luckiest mayor in New York City history. He had 7 years of fat budgets, you know, fat revenue. He never had to budget in the sense of actually choosing between competing goods. He just spent every dime that was available to him. He increased the budget by $20 billion year over year. It went up three times faster than the rate of inflation. He was very lucky he skated on his corruption charges. And then, you know, Biden won and was able to give him, you know, $12 billion so he didn't have to worry about, you know, doing any layoffs or anything for his final year. His legacy, I think it's going to be like that he was basically a disaster.
Yeah, well, I think you might even be being slightly charitable. One of the things that emerged as a major problem even prior to the pandemic and the ensuing civil unrest in the aftermath of George Floyd and the uptick in violent crime post-bail reform, one of the things that we started to see become a problem before all that was homelessness, namely the amount of streeted homeless, which was visible to everybody. Why did the homeless problem become a problem seemingly all of the sudden? Where were all these homeless people during the Bloomberg and Giuliani era? Did these homeless folks just decide to move back to the streets as soon as Bloomberg left? What happened? What were the contributing factors to the homeless crisis?
Well, this New York State has eliminated a lot of psychiatric beds. This has been going on for years, and it sort of flies under the radar. But a lot of the street homeless have serious mental illness, and it's untreated, and that's why they're on the streets. The fact that they're not, that the state has cut back on the resources on having beds in psychiatric hospitals for them to be treated, that's a major problem. Another reason is they've cut down the number of people in jail. I mean, they've released a lot of people. You know, I don't want to say that these people should necessarily be in jail, though some of them probably should. But, you know, Rikers Island has wound up being the largest mental health facility in New York State because so many of the people there have serious mental illness. So if you let them out, well, then they wind up on the streets. You know, de Blasio has been very sparing with using Kendra's law to impose like court oversight over seriously mentally ill people and force them to, you know, stay in treatment. So I think all of those have contributed.
And it's going to be very interesting to see how the next mayor, whoever it is, tries to put a Band-Aid on all this stuff, because as Yogi Berra would say, it's getting late early. Is there anything nice that you can say about Mayor de Blasio and his tenure as mayor?
Sometimes he does seem to really love his wife. I will grant him that. He seems to be very, I think he genuinely loves his wife and his children. And in that sense, he's a good model of a husband and father.
All right. Well, that's something. That's something. You, I guess, are not among the chorus of de Blasio critics who give him a little bit of credit for universal pre-K, are you?
I think universal pre-K actually was not a bad idea. I was skeptical at first, and I still think that the benefits are overstated, but it does seem to be a popular program. People forget that it was actually Cuomo who figured out a way to pay for it.
I was just going to mention that. I mean, I doubt that Governor Cuomo would have done that if he were not looking for a way to one-up Mayor de Blasio. But since you mentioned Governor Cuomo, it looks like he has no intention of resigning. All indications are he plans to run for re-election next year. How do you see that going if the governor does, in fact, run for re-election? How do you handicap his chances?
Oh, I think he has a pretty good chance. You know, he'd probably get primaried from the left again, but he'll triangulate. And, you know, at that point, crime will be so bad. You know, who's to say? I don't really know how the primary will work, but he's definitely going to run again. And I think he's got a, you know, maybe like a, I give him a 60% chance of winning the election.
So you would say he's the favorite at this point?
Oh, sure. I mean, he's got so much money, and people still seem to like him.
Yeah, it is interesting. It'll be interesting to see if he's actually impeached, because after all, I think all of the major state legislative leaders have now called for him to go. But if he's impeached and he's removed from office, if he still seeks to run again, and if he's able to get elected in a circumstance like that, how that would turn out would certainly be interesting. Now, let me ask your view of education, Seth. We've spent some time talking on the radio about the battle over New York City's specialized high schools. A lot of people don't like what they've described as de facto segregation that goes on in these specialized high schools, where not a lot of black students, not a lot of Hispanic students, almost overwhelmingly Asian and white students. Is that a problem? And if that is a problem, is the solution to that problem doing away with the specialized high school examination?
You know, it's funny. When people talk about segregation in New York City schools, I mean, you have to remember, the city schools are only 15% white to begin with, right? So here's the thing. Is the problem with having schools that are majority black and Latino, is the problem that black kids need to be near white kids in order to learn? Like, what is the magic of white children that allows black students to learn better? You know, and you can't tell me, well, it's a question of resources, because New York City schools are not funded by property taxes the way they are in suburban districts. Every New York City public school gets the same, funding is based on a formula. Yeah, there may be little marginal things like, you know, the PTA raises more money than a rich school. But by and large, it's all pretty much the same thing. As far as the specialized high schools go, look, I mean, these schools, you know what makes them elite? You know what makes them really good schools? The students. They're just very talented students.
Right.
It doesn't really make a difference what school they're in. They're going to succeed.
Yeah, I mean, you take the same student body that's at Stuyvesant or Brooklyn Tech right now, and you plunk them in the worst performing school in the city, your point is they would still deliver pretty impressive results at that school.
Of course.
Yeah.
Absolutely. They're all self-motivated. It's not really like a question. This idea that somehow sending someone to the school will magically, you know, produce like a great scholar or something is silly. Look, there's the name factor, and you know that's nice, but I think that the whole argument is foolish. The real problem is that the city's junior high schools are terrible, and look, they're getting worse. The Lab School in Manhattan, prestigious junior high school, just announced that they're going to cancel advanced math classes.
Mm. Well, they did backtrack on that after some of the parental outrage. Thankfully.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that's good to know. But you know, this is the tendency, right? This is where they're headed. I call it the No Child Gets Ahead policy.
Yeah, well, that seems pretty apropos. Seth Baron, I want to wish you the best of luck with the book, The Last Days of New York, A Reporter's True Tale. If you want to know why New York is in the shape that it's in and why, unlike other difficult times, New York may have a tough time recovering this time around, this book is required reading. Thanks so much for the time this morning, Seth.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you. If you want to comment on any portion of our discussion, you're welcome to give me a call, 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Want to wish a happy birthday to baseball manager Dusty Baker. You know, I think I'm starting to think there's something to this astrology thing, because I have noticed when I do the birthdays, there are clusters of similar people, all who of whom are born the same day. And because it's also Baseball Hall of Famer Billy Williams' birthday, former NFL head coach Mike Holmgren's birthday, and Baseball Hall of Famer Wade Boggs. He's 63 today. I used to love Wade Boggs. I was a huge Wade Boggs fan. That was my kind of ball player, Wade Boggs. I love him. But what are the chances that you have three or four notable athletes all born the same day? It's also Jim Belushi's birthday today. He's 67 years old. Looks pretty good for 67, I think. And also Helen Hunt's birthday today. And Courtney Cox from Friends, 57 years old. I saw some photos of her in that Friends special. I didn't watch the Friends special, but there was obviously a lot of news coverage of the Friends special. She does not look like she's 57. So she is aging pretty well from what I can tell. So happy birthday to all of them and to all of you who might be celebrating a birthday today, whatever the case may be. In terms of people in my social group that are celebrating a birthday today, it is my friend Clara McDonald's birthday today. Also, Frankie Gotti Albano's birthday today, the grandson of the Dapper Don himself, John Gotti. So happy birthday to Frankie Gotti. So whatever the case may be, hope all of your wishes come true. Coming up next hour, well, I'll tell you about this raid that the federal government has done of people's safe deposit boxes. And maybe we'll get into these Greg Kelly comments as well. If you have comments about these, the interview I did with Seth Baron, give me a call, 800-848-9222. Your influence counts, so use it.